Welcome to the Diecast, everybody. I'm Seamus, and with me this week is Rutzgarn.
Yo.
Also here is Mumbles.
I didn't sell out. I bought it.
Campster.
Hello.
And that's it. Oh, wait. Is Josh here?
You know, I was actually gonna make a comment that I hate it when you do it where you always name me first, because then I have to come up with something witty before anyone else does, and I can't just follow someone else's example. But then you didn't even name me, so that works too.
Okay, so Josh isn't here.
No.
Oh well, maybe next week. What are we gonna talk about this week? Let's talk about some stuff that we're doing. Oh, Mumbles, you were playing the Final... Mumbles, you
Famo,
were playing the Famo.
The Family. You know, Mumbles, why do you call yourself Mumbles? No,
For the record, people listening at home, this is how I've been talking for the last hour, is just this complete incoherent mush mouth mashing like three words together at a time into this horrible abomination that makes no sense. So naturally, I decided to host.
Seamus, you're just happy that I'm back.
Yes.
You just can't even talk. That I'm so happy that I'm back. Okay, so I've been playing the Final Fantasy MMO. It's cross-platform, so you can play it on the PS4 and the PC at the same time, in the same world, in the same server, or whatever.
Do any other games do that? Is that unique to this game? I can't think of any games where I can play with this console.
There was one game last generation that did this between the 360 and the PC, but I don't remember what it was.
It was a shooter,
and it did not work.
Yeah, it's very unique, and it actually works pretty well, because, I mean, it's just an MMO. Like, I think it'd be harder with a shooter, maybe, but it works really well, and Nick and I have been trying to find a game like this, because he's a console gamer, and I'm more of a PC gamer, and it's easier for me to be on my computer while he's playing on the TV. So he plays it on the PS4, and then I play it on the PC, and we just run around, and it's just a regular fucking MMO. They do, you know, in Guild Wars 2 where you just show up in an area and there's like a dragon and then you help everyone defeat the dragon and then everyone gets experience points and like runs off and hugs each other and whatever. It's the same thing.
Uh-huh.
They do that. They have all these different crafting classes. The actual classes, the combat classes are pretty fun. I play an Arcanist, and you like summon a pet and then you just do like diseases on people. So it's kind of like a mix between, I guess it's just a necromancer, honestly. It's like a pretty version, a Final Fantasy version.
Is this a necromancer with really bad hygiene?
No, it's a necromancer with like, who like learned all of the disease spells, but then was like, instead of summoning a blood monster, I want to summon a cute sparkly kitten. So I'm going to do that instead.
Wow.
But it's
So this is Final Fantasy 14, right? Because there are actually two
sure.
Final Fantasy MMOs.
Josh, if you think I can read Roman numerals, then you'd be wrong.
Yeah, they should maybe start putting numbers.
Yeah, you're lucky that I'm even here and I know how to use a computer.
You take the game and you hit somebody in the face with it and they'll go, oh, why'd you hit me in the face with Final Fantasy 14? And you're like, oh, that's what this is.
Thank you, kind sir.
So this was the one that, like, launched and it was really, really bad, right? And then they took it all offline and remade the game in, like, a year and then re-released it.
Yeah, they fired the guy who was in charge of it. Because it was so fucking bad. And then they just repackaged it, and now it's a new game. And, it's a good game. It's kind of silly, like, oh, there's all these, like, stupid little quests, like, oh, go get all the dodos, and then you get the dodos, and he's like, okay, now will you be the mom of these dodos until I have to slaughter them? And you're like, what? What?
Okay, that's the best possible kind of MMO. Don't ask me to take it seriously, just be surreal.
It's got a really weird sense of humor. And the tutorial area for me was like a pirate zone, so all of them had speech impediments and all talked like fucking pirate. So the text, the explanation text would be in stupid piratese, so I'd have to just sit there and like read it aloud to fucking know what they're even saying.
See, like, that actually sounds delightful. It's like I just finished playing The Secret World, and it was so fucking boring. And I don't know.
Oh, Secret World,
like,
fuck Secret World. Light.
Yeah. I don't know if you're here for that, or if you heard that week where I talked about my experiences with The Secret World.
Oh, no. I'm sure it was awful, like, though. I could have told you.
The short version is that we tried to make, like, really goofy Illuminati characters as jokes. Like, oh, haha, we're the Illuminati, but we're really conspicuous. And then we get to the hub zone and it's Anime Expo.
Yeah.
Well, that's like Final Fantasy at its best, though, isn't it? Like, when it's being really weird and wacky and not really trying to take itself too seriously.
I totally agree. I think it's more fun when it's just ridiculous, because Final Fantasy is fucking ridiculous. And, I mean, it does have, like, some serious plots, like, oh no, this thing's happening. Or, like, you go and you meet the queen, and then you talk to, like, her bodyguard, and he's like, yeah, everybody in this town's fucking poor, and the queen just keeps putting on balls, and, like, what are you gonna do about it? Go fucking get her crown. And you're like, but what? Like, it's got, like, this weird, like, sensibility about it that, I don't know, it's kind of interesting. And I always wanted an MMO that I could play and not fucking hate. And if I have Nick to play it with, I think I'll play it longer, honestly. So,
that's
yeah.
Actually the important thing, is you need to find somebody to play it with.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, because it's an MMO, right? Oh, before we move on, can I say that I've been playing a game called Slammed. It's on Steam. It's a text-based game, and it's for wrestling fans. But if you're not a wrestling fan, you probably won't get most of the jokes. So it's mostly just for people who fucking like... It's a very, very small niche of people who fucking like wrestling. Because there's a lot of inside jokes.
Wait, that's a small niche?
Yeah.
Speaking of wrestling inside jokes, so I was at a game recently with somebody, and he told us that apparently there was an announcer at some point who kept, like, mistakenly identifying moves as something called a sidewalk slam.
Oh, God. Oh, they can't call moves. They can't call moves in the WWE. They're like, oh! Okay, so Seth Rollins did this thing called a Phoenix Splash, which is something he did in the indies, and I think this is the first time he's ever fucking done it in the main roster. So he does the Phoenix Splash, and it's amazing. Everybody fucking shits their pants. It's gold. And the next day, Michael Cole is like, oh, you did a 360 flippity flip turn shit. And it's just like, learn the fucking move. Learn the name of the move. That basically, the announcers only know, like, oh, bulldog, off the rope, hurricanrana, head scissors, chokehold. Like, that's fucking it.
That's weird, because they're literally the only people in the world who need to, like, know that. people in the world who need to have that information.
I know you guys think that I watch wrestling, but unfortunately, I actually watch sports entertainment. And in sports entertainment, you don't fucking need to know any wrestling moves. In fact, if you're a wrestler, you're probably going to lose all the time. Can you tell that I'm bitter? Can you tell that I'm going to WrestleMania this year, and it's going to be shit? Because that's what's happening to me, so...
Are you just going to rush the stage and start punching people and then discover your career in wrestling?
Oh, God.
Pick people up and like, hey, do you know what this move is called? Do you know what I just did to you? Does anybody know what that's called?
Do you know what that's called? If you're going to watch WrestleMania this year, look for a sign that says Broom Broom. Only wrestling fans will get it. That's where I'll be. That'll be me holding that sign. Broom, broom.
All right, cool. I'm probably not going to watch it, but if I did, I would. That would be probably the only
thing
I would
find.
Do.
If I find a clip of me on it, I will cut it, and I'll send it to you guys, and then everyone can fucking see me pretending to sleep during the Roman Reigns match. It'll be great.
Wow. That's bitter.
I am fucking bitter. All right, moving
on. Well, no, I actually really want to do this now. I want this to be my job. I want to just, like, be watching wrestling matches and just be really confidently calling out just moves that I came up with. Just, like, some
You'd
guy works
great.
Super hard and develops this technique, and then he just hears me go, oh, it's a Bulgarian-style pepper spray.
No, you would be great, because really, that's the best they're doing. Like, oh, it's a half choke slam into a 55 finisher, and you're like, what? No, bro, that's not, no, that was just a
Isn't part of the showmanship thing to make these moves sound awesome and dangerous and, like, secret techniques?
Yeah, but like I said, Seamus, it's sports entertainment. It's not wrestling.
I see.
It's not wrestling. We dance to the ring.
You know, we were going to do video games for spoiler warning, but maybe we should just do riff tracks of wrestling matches.
Oh, you guys don't want that. I'm in a bad place right now. Like, there's good wrestling, and then there's what's happening right now. And it sucks because if you love wrestling as much as I do, and if you've studied it as much as I do, like, when you see what they're doing now, you're just like, what's the point? Like, they don't love it, then why should I? Yeah, anyway, okay.
Okay, moving on. You know what? I'll do my announcement next. I have teamed up with Pyrodactyl. That's the guys behind Unrest. And we're going to put out Good Robot. We're going to finish that damn video game, and it's going to be a real video game that you can buy, like, at a video game place. And it's going to happen. And we even had meetings, and we have a goal. We're like, okay, we need this features, and then we can ship. So this is pretty exciting for me. I've never come this close to finishing a project. I mean, like, a real project with gameplay that wasn't just a stupid engine.
But do you have Steam cards yet? Because that's the important thing.
Do you have Steam achievements?
I did have jokes. I did make jokes like that at the beginning of the project. All right, okay, most important. You know, what are our Steam cards going to be? And, you know, that joke gets old, so... but we are going to have, but we probably are, we actually, the even funnier idea was putting achievements and Steam cards in Unrest. Like, can you imagine achievements in Unrest? It's like, oh, achievement, you watched a beggar starve to death.
Yeah, or, I think the only amazing. Way I can handle that would be to be brutally sarcastic like that.
Yeah.
Just congratulations, yeah. You got yourself executed for standing up for what you believed in.
Oh.
Or, like, instead of the characters in the game, the cards would be, like, famine, war, zealotry. You know, all the forces
that
are...
That's not heavy-handed.
Institutionalized racism.
Yes! Institutionalized, that's the best one! Man, I want the gold version. I want the gold foil version of institutionalized racism.
You get a bunch of emoticons that are just skulls. Just like the dried, weathered skulls of all the characters.
But, I haven't checked with the rest of the team, but I think Good Robot isn't going to have the same tone.
Are you sure?
Yeah, my initial pitch for a extremely depressing Good Robot that was about socioeconomic issues in ancient India was rejected by the committee. Vote was 2-3.
But it's happening, and we're working on it, we're checking in changes, things are happening, it's almost like we're making a real video game like adults, it's amazing. So that's happening, and there will probably be, at some point later this week, hopefully, a more formal announcement with, like, what's really going on with the game. But I've been sitting on this for, like, 3 weeks now, and I just wanted to tell somebody.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Well,
I knew
you
I was never
going to...
Did
you it on Twitter?
Yeah, I did. I did sort of mention it on Twitter. Okay, in
Don't
the
you know
news this
work,
week...
Josh, you have to stagger your announcements out.
I don't know. I'm not in marketing. Although my boss did forward a position to me for to apply for if I wanted to for advertising coordinator, which I thought was a really weird thing. Like,
ew. I'd go with prostitution before I did that.
No. Any promotion at this point at my job.
I actually had a conversation with my dad when I was 16 and I was about to go to college. I'm like, hey, Dad, what do you think about me going into marketing? And he said, why don't you just become a drug dealer instead? And, like, He actually sounded pretty serious.
My problem is that any kind of promotion at this point at my job would require me to move to San Francisco, and I can't afford to live there.
No one can afford to live out here.
The people that live there can't afford to live there.
I know. Yeah. I looked at the prices. It's ridiculous.
I'm planning on, as soon as I am able to, like, move somewhere that's less fucking expensive. All I need is, like, a Target.
Oh, Las Vegas is super cheap.
A Target and, like, Amazon delivery, and I think I'd be fine. I don't need this big city nonsense.
Yeah. A Target, Amazon delivery, and reliable internet. That's all you need to live.
Pizza Hut.
Nothing else. Okay, Pizza Hut I would consider a luxury. Yeah. Some pizza delivery. And maybe once you secure those things, maybe you also want a roof over your head. But I would get those other three things first.
Maybe.
Is this like a new pyramid of needs for the 21st century?
At the top is internet, and then... Yeah, I don't know.
Yes.
Something else after that.
The rest doesn't really matter.
Like, just get me the internet. I can look up the other ones.
What are you doing? I'm really hungry, so I'm looking up pictures of food.
So, in the news this week is sad news. No One Lives Forever is never, ever going to come out or get re-released or anything, even though that could totally happen.
Your sad news story for this week is No One Lives Forever is not coming out.
Well, the thing is, that is sad because it's basically a game, you know, it is a game that is getting to that point where it's really hard to get it running. This is a perfect time of it in its lifespan for it to appear on good old games or get a Steam re-release. The guys who were putting the game back together basically even had the source code. And a lot of the source code for these 90s games have been lost. But they had the source code. All they needed was permission. And they could not get permission. The company couldn't be bothered to give it to them. Wouldn't be, you know, it was like, we can't be bothered to even go into this deal with you because there's not enough money for it to be worth our time, which is just so terrible.
Yeah, because, I mean, this is non-trivial to me. I've never played this game. I was, like, 9 years old when it came out, and I remember everybody saying it was really good. But, like, I was kind of too young for it, and mostly just my family was interested in picking it up. So by the time, like, I had the means to go out and seek it out, it, like, already wasn't really working on computers.
Yeah. Like, imagine if somebody couldn't get the rights to, like, print new copies of Lord of the Rings. Okay, No One Lives Forever isn't quite the Lord of the Rings of video games, but just imagine how unbelievable that would be. Here's a popular thing. People still like it. You cannot buy it with monies. You can't get it.
I don't know. Given the way the Tolkien estate has been running things, that wouldn't surprise me all that much.
If you want to talk contemporaries, imagine if you couldn't get, like, the rights to print new DVD copies of Lord of the Rings, the movie, from Peter Jackson. Or, like, you couldn't get it online.
Yeah. It is only, like, 10-ish years old. I mean, I'll look up the exact year, but it's... No One Lives Forever, and especially NOLF 2, are not that old.
Yeah, No One Lives Forever was from 2000.
Okay, so it's 15 years old.
Yeah.
Well, so is Lord of the Rings, and NOLF 2 is 2002. So yeah, it's like, imagine if you could still maybe get copies of Return of the King, but nobody could ever print or make any new copies of Fellowship or Two Towers. That's about the time frame we're talking about for this to go from, like, major retail release to literally no one sells it, no one has ownership, it is in legal limbo, it is effectively a non-person, it doesn't exist. And what makes it tragic is, I mean, if I don't know how many people listening to this have actually played it, but it really was, like, it had a lot of character. It was really funny. It was a really, really enjoyable game that sort of predates a lot of that. It came out only 2 years after Half-Life, but it really had a lot more sort of a narrative-y, story-y slant, and it was all played up for sort of Austin Powers comedy.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just frustrating, because, like, I see a lot of this sort of pseudo-60s revival stuff going on now between, you know, arguably Team Fortress, Archer, Mad Men. It would fit into what we're doing with the zeitgeist right now, and it just... I would love to see this re-released. They are funny games. They're adorable games. They form a nice counterpoint to sort of the humor-based FPS PC games from the mid-90s. You know, they're a nice counterpoint to stuff like Blood and Postal 2 and Duke Nukem. This is a little bit less mean-spirited.
Yeah.
And we have those games.
More lighthearted games, like right now, would be really good, too. I mean, there's definitely more now, but I feel like a lot of games in the last couple of years have been super heavy and super, like, set on being dark and gritty and all that shit. So I think more games that are light and colorful and fun, especially if they're nostalgic.
Strongly in favor of...
So, you know, I'm working on Good Robot soon, but the project I actually just finished was... Arvin's old game, Will Fight for Food. Like, I stripped out all of the dialogue and rewrote it. And I have to say, it felt really good to actually just write a game that was funny. Like, to just try to write something that's amusing. I mean, as much as I love writing Unrest, which is, like, there's maybe one or two funny parts in it, but it's not what you call a rollicking laugh riot for the whole family.
I would agree. I did not spend much of the playtime of the game giggling. The number of giggles per minute in Unrest is fairly low.
Not many yucks in the slums. But no, I mean, like, I sort of realize how few games I've played lately that have made me laugh.
Haven't games kind of had a long-standing problem with humor, though? Like, particularly mainstream games?
It's gotten worse.
Oh, yeah. Mainstream games, when they try and do humor, it's awful. It's, hey, pop culture reference. Get it?
Yeah, I wonder if the punchline can't be delivered correctly. Like, I wonder if there's something about games that make, like, the flow of a joke not work out the same way that it would be if someone was just saying it to you or if it was in a movie. Because a lot of the times when I play a game and someone tells a joke, it feels like I'm just standing there going, ugh, like, okay, all right, you did that. Good job. You made an attempt, but, like, it never
feels... I saw that one coming over the horizon, but you brought it all the way here, so golf clap.
I think, like, if games use their mechanics more to tell jokes, like how... Do you remember in Portal 2 where it was the end of the game, and it's like, this is the part where I kill you, and then the title screen comes up, this is the yes. part where he kills you, and then the achievement yeah. comes up, this is the part where he kills you. It's like, yes. that's fucking funny. And it's just because they use the game to tell the joke.
Also, mechanical jokes are the one where she's making jokes about how fat you are, and the slingshot or that's supposed to fling you across the room
yeah.
can't do it. And she's like, oh, sorry, it must need to be turned up for your... and it's unexpected. When you're expecting this to do one thing, and you hop on it, and it does something different, and you're like, what? Oh, you're having fun at my expense, I see.
That game's a treasure trove for those sorts of moments, because you also have, like, the very beginning of the game where you're talking to Wheatley, and it's, you know, press A to nod your head or whatever, and you press
yes.
A, and it's or you space, and you jump. And
right.
it's like, oh, you have a problem. You may have suffered brain damage from being in cryostasis that long.
Yeah, so mechanical jokes, incredibly rare. Like, I can't think of another game that really does mechanical... There's a corollary to this in movies, and I will link it in the show notes. There's a new YouTube channel I'm in love with called Every Frame of Painting, where he's like, oh,
yes.
here's, oh, so good. Where he talks about doing comedy, and movies have this exact same problem where people just stand around and say the funny things, and there's nothing funny about the cinematography. And then he uses Edgar Wright, Shaun of the Dead guy, to show,
one of my favorite
look,
directors.
Yeah. Every camera cut, all these weird compositions where it's an unexpected, like, cut, 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 and then show something funny, and then cut again, and you're like, wait, what? Oh. And comedy, American comedy movies don't do that at all. They never use their cinematography to tell jokes, and video games don't use their mechanics to tell jokes. It's always just somebody says a funny thing, and then it pauses so that in case you mm-hmm. may have laughed.
Yeah, it's funny. I was about to say I could think of one exception, and it was like a shot from Scott Pilgrim that I'm like, wait a minute. No, that was Edgar Wright.
Yes. Yes.
It is interesting that a lot of the really funny stuff that we find in games, I mean, oh, most of the humor on Spoiler Warning that's not us making fun of stuff is like, oh, Josh found something really stupid in the game that's not supposed to happen because the game mechanics are coming together in a weird way.
Yeah, if we're going to look at that, then I suppose Skyrim might have been the funniest game of its year. It was intentional, but that time where a woolly mammoth was floating 100 meters off the ground and it fell down and...
And then slingshotted into space.
And that pissed off another woolly mammoth, which punted some other creature into the stratosphere. And then, you know, you find yourself in this awkward fight that you didn't intend to be in and that isn't your fault and you don't even understand what's going on and everything's on fire. Those are funny moments. But none of them were like... Nobody tried to make that happen. It's really bugs as performance art.
Well, and I think that they, like, the video game community, I think, is, like, hungry for more funny things, because you'll take something stupid like the Garrus calibrations thing and make it into a joke that is, like, every Mass Effect fan knows the Garrus calibrations joke. But it's not really a joke. It's just something that he does in the game. If you keep trying to talk to him, he keeps saying the same shit. And it's like, I just think that people, like, want to have more humor. So I think more attempts to try and get it into the games would be better for everybody. Even, like, kind of serious games. Just, like, less jokes and more, I don't know. I don't know how you would do it if you weren't just telling a fucking joke.
More using, more
less
getting
jokes,
the mechanics.
More comedy.
Yeah, getting the mechanics involved.
Or like Morrowind. Morrowind, the part where you find the dude who fucking, like, falls from the sky and you're like, what? And then you look at him and he's got, like, the jumping boots or whatever. Like, that's a joke. And that's a joke everyone knows, and that is 100% the mechanic.
The boots of blinding speed are kind of a similar joke. You get the boots, you trade for the boots, and they make you go super fast, but they literally make you blind. They turn the brightness down to a ridiculous degree so you can't see what's going on. I don't know how funny it was, like, if the player's gonna feel ripped off, but that's getting the mechanics involved.
Here's the thing. You could put on magic resistance, like, 100% for 1 second, and then you could put on the boots, and they'll be fine forever.
In Borderlands 2, there's a cursed gun, and you go through this quest to get the cursed gun. Then once you get it, and you pick it up and start using it, it starts screaming in a really high-pitched noise.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, it's an amazing gun.
Can't you not unequip it after that?
No, you can unequip it, but you go like 2 miles an hour when you're firing it or holding it.
Yeah, and great.
When I got it, I was like, oh, everybody's like, don't use that gun, it's cursed. And I'm like, oh, please, it's cursed. It's not going to be cursed. I know the mechanics of this video game. The gun, there isn't cursed items. You know, I was thinking like Diablo cursed items where you can't unequip it. And I knew they weren't going to do that. And then you pick it up and you can walk so slow and it shouts things at you. It's constantly
amazing.
Cussing and insulting you and... Oh, it's... Oh, wait, there was another one. There was...
Swapping
I'm confusing
weapons.
It with,
There's the robot. No, there's a robot that you can turn into a gun that's actually kind of fun, because that robot is like, why aren't we shooting things? Why did you stop shooting?
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, I love this gun.
The cussing I was confusing with another gun in Borderlands, the pre-sequel. You get a gun that's just this foul-mouthed thing. It's always cussing, but it's, you know, but all these guns are really, they have high damage, so it's always, I kind of want to use it, but it's really, really irritating, and that's a funny problem to have.
I think Destiny kind of dropped the ball on this. They actually have a gun that, according to the lore, does this. I'm on an exotic quest to get it, right?
No, but see, in Destiny, it's that the guns are good, but then the game itself is really irritating. That's the joke.
Yeah, it's one long joke is man, it's Peter Dinklage Simulator 2015. No,
the punchline is you're still playing it 3 weeks later.
Yeah, that is kind of the punch. There's a gun, an exotic gun in the game that's like supposed to talk to you, and you like get the quest text for like the bounty that like you. The quest you do to get the gun that I'm actually doing right now, and it's like, oh, the gun talks to you and talks about how like. It's a heavy weapon, and there's two classes of heavy weapons, machine guns and rocket launchers. It's a machine gun, so it's constantly, like, taunting rocket launchers and talking shit about rocket launchers, which sounds cool in theory, that but then you funny. Get the gun and it doesn't actually say anything. Like,
no.
There's no voice file for
Destiny,
it.
Destiny, you suck!
Oh!
Destiny, the word!
I guess that would have been too interesting. Or else you would have got it. Yeah. It would just be Peter Dinklage's voice being like, and then we set off across the plane.
That is some bullshit.
It would be Peter Dinklage saying, I could tell you how much rocket launchers suck. And that would be it.
Bill
but
Nye.
I'm not gonna.
Bill Nye.
All right, moving on.
Speaking of humor in video games...
Speaking of video games that suck, how many years ago did Spore come out? How old is Spore?
It's
is
2008.
Like I can't do math.
I played
that
it on
like
the Nintendo DS.
So like 7 years ago-ish? That's an old game. I finally played it yesterday. I originally boycotted it because it was the obnoxious DRM, and then a few weeks ago Chris got it for me as a joke, and now I boot it up, and I find out the DRM basically, well, it's on Steam, so, you know, that argument ended years ago anyway, but its additional phone home DRM is apparently no longer enabled. Like, I didn't have to type any shit in or do anything or type in any codes. It pesters the hell out of you. It acts like a Nagware game. Hey, you're missing out on core features. Hey, you can't use a multiplayer. Hey, you want to sign up for an EA account? And I'm like, nope. Do you want our newsletter? Nope. But then I played the game, and really, I'm about to say things everybody said in 2008, which is, it's a great, great game up until you get to the end of the creature stage, and I instantly lost all interest. I got to the tribal stage, and
is
I was like,
even really
I played
a great
5 minutes
up to that point, though.
Okay, yeah, you know what? Different, new, and there is a seed of a great game in the creature that, like, this feels like an idea that should be expanded and turned into its own game. And instead, it's part of a larger, much more boring game. The Tidepool stage is really just boring. And the Tribal stage, I got into it, played it for 5 minutes, and realized I suddenly didn't care.
You realized you were in the post-credit secret play sequence.
I would recommend sticking through the tribal sequence. That is by far the worst of the minigames. It is absolutely awful.
The sequence is even worse than that.
Well, I mean, there's the SimCity bit, which is kind of fun. I mean, it's like a super shallow SimCity, and honestly, it's a better SimCity than SimCity 2013. Plus, you get to make your own buildings. And then,
man, Maxis, remember when you could make good video games like Spore?
No, we're not talking about SimCity. No!
No, I didn't mean to bring it up. The tribal bit of Spore really is the worst, and the SimCity bit is better. The Civ bit is also not so great because it involves combat around a giant sphere, and it really just is like amassing the most units. It's not really strategic. But the best part of Spore to me is when you finally get to space and it becomes this giant exploration space trading game, and that's actually kind of cool and fun.
I thought it was super lame compared to what they were talking about with it.
Well,
before
sure.
the yeah, game came
isn't
out.
Isn't how those games
like,
tend to go, though?
Well, okay, so Spore, like, the whole reason that anyone was paying attention to Spore was a demo that Will Wright gave, I think, in 2006 at E3, where he showed off, like, all this cool stuff.
It was at GDC.
Was it at GDC? Maybe, okay.
Yeah, I was there.
Oh, you were there. Okay,
yes.
So you know what I'm talking about then. So I was super anticipating the game before it came out, and it was this great big demo where he showed, like, oh, you can create creatures, and they'll, like, populate the world, and you can have, like, underwater civilizations, and you'll get up to the... You'll develop intelligence, and you'll be able to start a civilization, and then you'll get into space, and we've got the whole universe, their whole galaxy being simulated, and we were like, wow, what possibilities could be beyond that? And it turns out there weren't any. That was it. That was the whole game, was the demo that he showed. Actually, less than that.
It's a little bit Peter Molyneux-y when you play the game.
It was. Everyone was super disappointed.
Yeah, because I think what people were expecting would be that, like, the alterations you can make to the animal models would have some kind of organic, like, direct control over how the animals performed. Like, oh, if I give it a long neck, that'll help it, like, be a predator. But it turns out that most of that stuff was cosmetic.
There was that. There was a lot of speculation about, like, how, like evolution would work, like how the environment would affect your creature, which does not exist in the game at all. And there was a lot of like the pitch that he gave there was it was a game about like the evolution of life to intelligence to civilization to like a spacefaring you know, sort of end-game civilization situation. And what the game is actually about is the creature creator, which was not what I signed up for.
I'm actually... This is another one of those games that I really wish that we had a proper, you know, post-mortem on from inside sources, because the game was delayed several times, and it's pretty clear that the game they envisioned is not the game they ultimately went with, and I'm curious how much of that is EA's meddling versus stuff just didn't work from a technical level versus stuff that just from a design perspective fell apart. I could see all three of those being a factor. Like the tech they were involved developing was really, really fancy stuff for basically procedurally generating an entire universe, which to this day no one has done anything like Spore. I mean, we can make fun of how it plays forever, but
yeah, I mean, like you could say Dwarf Fortress, I suppose, but yeah.
Well, I mean, procedurally generating it graphically. I mean, Dwarf Fortress actually does a far better job of procedurally generating the story of a place, but actually procedurally generating the content to fill it up, no one does it as good as Spore. And so I imagine there were technical problems, but then this also was EA and Maxis right around the time Will Wright had just finished pumping out The Sims, and The Sims became its own brand, and I think the expectation was this would become another, you know, Sims-level, Sims-size success, and that's why they were giving Will Wright all the money to do crazy experiments and procedural art generation, and I think...
And that's also why you saw games come out shortly afterwards, like Darkspore.
Yeah, which was...
Yep.
Yeah. But, so I wonder if there was some sort of influence from higher-ups to make it more user-friendly, which meant dumbing down the creature creator or things like that. And then I wonder if there were design considerations. Like, you know, we were just talking about, you know, make the neck longer so that the procedural animations give you, you know, if you have longer arms and maybe the physics calculations for when you do a swipe would, you know, it'd be accelerating faster because your arm is longer. Therefore, it's a degenerate strategy. Just make your giant long-armed, super long-armed strike monster and you could just win the game. And if that's the case, I could see why they took that out, because everyone would just, you know, just like there's kind of one easy way to win a lot of things in Bridge Builder or that Besieged game, I think there'd be one or two ways to win the entirety of Civilization or the entirety of the creature stage with one or two designs, and maybe that was why they sort of boiled it down to that MMO style, the eyes and claws you have are what determines your abilities.
That's the other thing that really rubbed me the wrong way, is the controls for this game are awful. I mean, really, really shockingly bad. It's like, it feels, very MMO-y. It's like an MMO, but you never have more than a couple things on your hotbar. You have to hold down a mouse button to turn
like
your head.
Total.
You can't friggin' invert the mouse. For those of us who invert mouse, that is super confusing. Oh my gosh, so it's this constant irritant of everything is backwards. And the whole hotbar-based combat is really stiff and dumb, and so it doesn't even feel good to play. Oh, to strafe left and right, you use Q and E. Whose idea was that? Had they not played a single video game in the last 15 years? I mean, that's something we pretty much settled on. We know how to move around in a game space. But instead, A and D are turned left and right, even though... So it's tank controls. Somebody decided
That is not an atypical MMO control scheme, especially for that time period, which is like, if you're holding down, like, the right click to look around, A and D do the strafe, but otherwise A and D turn you.
Yeah. But this is not an MMO, and why did somebody decide, yes, this is, like, MMOs behave that way because they're MMOs, and you're mostly playing on the hot bar, and the video game is sort of this incidental thing in the window, and it's like, no, look at this beautiful, vibrant world. I want to actually be in this world, not interacting through this world on the other side of a control panel of buttons. So it was super, super stiff, awkward, awful, horrible feeling game, and I just hated that. But I loved building creatures, and so, yeah.
I do wonder how much of the change to the creature stage... again, it's one of those things where I wish I knew the story for it. Because when Will Wright revealed it, he revealed each stage as being inspired by a game where, like, the protoplasm stage is obviously a Pac-Man-style thing, and then obviously the city building is SimCity, and the tribal stage is sort of a populace-y thing going on. And the creature stage, when it was presented before the game was out, was supposed to be sort of Diablo-y. It was supposed to be click on things and have the, you know, AI go attack them and then, you know, eat their meats level up. And then it turned into an MMO. Like, that's really what it is in the final version. And I'm kind of... I wonder what made them decide to go from, hey, let's make Diablo for this stage, to, hey, let's make it an MMO. And I legitimately am curious. I say this too much, but I really do wish we had, like, a post-mortem or a backstory for what happened during the development of this game.
I wish that of all games, but yes, especially of Spore. I would love to hear what happened.
There's some, like, unconfirmed or murkily confirmed reports of what was going on, although I don't remember exactly what it was, but I think Will Wright was one of the people who was pushing for, like, the creature creator heavy sort of thing, and kind of sacrificing a lot of the other thing. Another big change from that initial demo that annoyed a lot of people was that the game got a lot more cartoony by the time it came out. Like, the demo was quite a bit more, like, it wasn't realistic, but it was a bit, you know, more on that side of the scale, and the game at release is just, like, super, like, cutesy creatures and dick monsters, but mostly cutesy creatures.
Again, the original proposal in that E3 or that GDC demo was Will Wright's desire was to have an art style that would range from Giger-esque, you know, psychosexual industrial, all the way through to Care Bears, Cupers, you know, super duper cuddly. And the results obviously show that they didn't really get there. Everything has that sort of cuddly cuteness to it. There really is no hard edge to anything.
Yeah, I kind of wanted to make something look really ugly and mean, and I couldn't do it. You make the biggest, meanest predator covered in claws and fangs, and it still has a certain adorableness to it.
It's like a Pixar villain monster.
Yeah.
And the space stage, which I take it you didn't even get to.
No.
It's the only stage that has any depth to it. I'll give it that. I just didn't like the implementation of it at all. And that's what really put me off of the game, like, finally. Like, I played through the whole game once, basically. But the space stage is, like, you're ostensibly trying to run an empire. In fact, the game that Will Wright was comparing it to was, like, Master of Orion. But it's Creature Stage 2.0. You are a spaceship. You know, you have an empire that you're spreading, but you are a single spaceship. And if anything happens, you have to... Like, if someone attacks you and you're on the other fucking side of the empire, there is no, like, fleet that you have that you can just send there to deal with it. You have to go all the way over there yourself.
I wonder if the game was stretched too thin. Like, I wonder if they would have, like, made sequels or something. Like, what if they had the first Spore game that was based off character creation and, like, doing the tribe shit, and then the second Spore game was, like, the next stage? Because then that way it doesn't feel like... Because it feels like the game is trying to reach way too fucking far, and, like, that's gotta be part of the issue here, you know?
Yeah, it definitely was. Like, very transparently, it was far more broad than it could be deep.
You know what? This talk of the really shitty controls in Spore ties in nicely with our first mailbag question, so I want to jump there and then come back.
Okay.
Your diecast seems like a lot of early 3D games had trouble with camera controls. Why did it take so long for them to think of over-the-shoulder third person, or am I missing something? Level design, dynamic transparency, keeping the render budget down, or did I simply get unlucky and miss the early games that got it right? Thanks, Wide and Nerdy. So, yeah, I mean, remember, it used to be a thing that, like, that was a big part of game reviews, is like, oh my goodness, this game has horrible camera controls. Oh, the camera controls aren't bad. And you don't hear that anymore. Camera controls is basically a solved problem. Once in a while, a game will struggle with it, but the vast majority of games know what they're doing and have the camera basically where you want it.
Yeah. I think the answer to this question kind of ties a lot into which games you're actually talking about, because like some games, like very early 3D games, there were very early 3D games that had no camera problems, but most of those games were like the first sort of real 3D games that were really just like, hey, let's make flight simulators, which, I mean, the flight simulators existed in like commercial applications and military applications before they existed in game applications, I believe. Like there were flight simulators for teaching people how to fly airplanes before.
Right, but that's not even solving the problem. That's a game where you don't need a camera.
That's,
I mean, the camera is just sort of in the cockpit.
What about like Mario 64 or something? Like I'm trying to think.
Yeah, I was just going
to
ask
because
I didn't
camera problems.
Yeah, I was going to ask because I never played it.
I mean, as far as camera controls go where you don't have two analog sticks, I don't think 64 could have done it significantly better than it did. I mean, Mario 64 is
okay.
A really well-crafted game in general. But at the same time, there were a lot of 3D games at the time that didn't do, like, that were third person and did not do camera controls well at all.
I remember Tomb Raider was always, you're lining up a jump, I want to move back, and then all of a sudden the camera just goes away. It goes to someplace and you don't understand what it's doing, and you're like, what? Where am I? What happened? Why is everything different now?
Part of that is the advent of the dual analog stick, because with a PS1 controller, there's really not much you could do to control the camera, right? Like, unless you want to make a game where you hold down one of the triggers and then the D-pad suddenly gives you a free-floating camera, and even that's not going to be great when helping you line up a jump in Tomb Raider, for example.
Yeah, although Tomb Raider was originally a PC game, and it still didn't have good camera controls.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of that came from just, like, nobody had ever really messed around with these sorts of problems in the past. Like, and it was kind of unique to video games. Like, you don't have this problem in movies.
Yeah, there's a lot we take for granted on modern camera controls. Like, basically, you want the camera to be pointed to where you're going. And you don't want to constantly have, even if you do have a right analog stick, you probably don't want to constantly be making tons of adjustments, especially vertical ones. How many games you start going down a staircase and the camera just automatically tilts down a little bit? We take that for granted now, happens all the time, but the game actually has to do some thinking to realize, oh, you're going down the steps. I should be looking at the bottom of the steps and not make you adjust the camera. Because how annoying would that be? You start going down the steps and the camera stays level. So now the camera's just looking at the empty space in front of you and you're like, you can't see where your feet are going to land anymore. That'd be super annoying.
Yeah, there's actually a lot of... Yeah, there's a lot of logic that goes into how cameras behave.
How to keep the camera from shoving itself into a wall or going back through a wall so that you have to make the wall transparent and now the world looks all weird. And
what to do when the camera is being bumped up against a wall that you obviously don't want it to go through, but the player is also still trying to play. Like, they're not intentionally shoving it up against the wall to see what happens. They're, like, in a cramped space, and they're trying to play the game. And, like, where does the camera look when suddenly it has to be maybe closer to the player than it's supposed to be because it can't get through this wall?
I think the solution to that, a big part of the solution to that has been level design. I think they know hey, don't design tight corridors that turn a lot of corners that you're going to have to fight in. If you notice, we have a lot of, like, look at Last of Us. You generally, you'll go through a tight space, and then you'll open up into an area, and that's where you'll have your encounter of stealth or combat. You don't often, like, back jolt up into a wall in some tight space where there's nowhere for the camera to go and be in a combat situation. So I won't say it never happened, but the levels are obviously designed so that will be very, very rare. Okay, dear DieCast cast. So one of the top people at EA made a statement at the DICE conference that today's games are too hard for new players to learn. I know that Seamus has some insights on this direction himself, but some of the games he's talking about, Battlefield, have a reputation for hand-holding and being simple exercises in following directions. Is this another example of the separation between casual and hardcore players, where the people deriding these games as too easy have forgotten what it's like to pick up a modern shooter without understanding the gameplay conventions of the genre? Or on the other hand, it feels like the Battlefield series isn't exactly targeted towards the new gamers who would be unfamiliar with those conventions. So could this be as simple as EA executives still being totally out of touch with their customer base? Or are there some other factors that I'm completely failing to account for? What is this name? Chazuvoy? Sorry for mispronouncing your name. Chazamataz.
Chazuvoy.
Yeah, what Rutzkern says.
Dear Sassafras, that's a very good question. Okay, actually I have a serious answer to that, which is that what he says is both correct and incorrect. It's kind of like I think the original person said about, you know, games being harder to learn nowadays is correct. Like, you know, on the one hand, games seem like they're more hand-holdy than ever, where you load it up and, like, the tutorials are more basic and sort of, like, where the actual, like, process of playing them, you get more like, oh, you have to go that way, you have to take up that thing, here's a compass point. But it's really, a lot of that doesn't actually help a new player super much. You know, it's not that a new player doesn't know where to go and doesn't know what to do, because they could probably figure those out, you know, sooner or later. It's more that, like, you know, the actual mechanics of shooting a guy and killing him and not getting shot to death yourself are hard.
Yeah, you know what? I think you've hit on it. Like, they take for granted that you know, like, when you fire up Battlefield, it takes for granted the idea that you know where the right bumper is and the right trigger and how to use the analog stick to look. It takes for granted that you know all of that, but then it won't trust you to open a damn door for yourself. It's actually completely inverting what needs to be explained to the player. Something that actually is newbie-friendly would be something that would be a little hand-holdy, making sure that you know the controls. And this would have to be separate. You can't put this in the game. 99% of the players out there know what they're doing, and they do not want a tutorial on how do I joystick this video game. But for the people who do need it, they really need it. But nobody needs to be told, now walk across the room. Now look at this. You know, to
whatever.
Give that...
Right.
Do you guys remember, like, I think System Shock and Half-Life did it, and a more recent game did it too. I think it was, what's the fucking mech one? Thunderdome. Titanfall. Thunderdome. What the fuck's wrong with me? What about, like, a tutorial area? Like, hey, I don't know how to play this game. Why not make a whole level that's, like, based on teaching you each step
that's
of what to
absolutely
do?
Absolutely the best thing to do. Because that's the problem. It's not that, like, they can't figure out, oh no, I need to go down a hallway and open the door. It's that they can't figure out, like, how to move and switch their weapons,
like,
and
stealth.
Aim at targets and take cover while 10 enemies attack them at once.
Yeah, exactly.
Players have no problem, even new players have no problems, like, you know, eventually learning how to manage the controls. They have trouble doing that under fire. To my mind, the best, I think the best tutorial to hand somebody who's completely new to first-person shooters is the one in Unreal Tournament. You know, you set them up, and, like, it takes them through, like, step by step. All right, here's how you look around. Okay, you got it. Now walk over there. Yeah, pick that up. Okay, yeah, shoot this target. Okay, you're shooting the targets. Now we're going to release a guy who can't hurt you. He's just going to run around. He's going to fire at you, but you're not going to take damage. And you need to kill him 5 times.
Yep. And that's, and 99% of us don't need that. But for the one person who just has never done mouse and keyboard movement before, that's crucial, because it is, people underestimate just how chaotic and confusing combat is if you don't know what to do next. And people will just paralyzed, and they will stop looking at the screen and look at the controller. They are no longer playing the video game. They have no idea what buttons to push, and they are getting way too much sensory information to make sense of any of it. So yeah, I think you're right. Just the tutorial level, and it doesn't even need to be unique game space. Just take a level from the game and recycle it.
See, I kind of disagree with that, though, because, like, you know, my mom is not going to be able to play Battlefield if you give her a controller and give her the opportunity to kill one dude first. Like, Battlefield, when you step back and look at it, is a hugely complicated game. There's sighting people, there's switching weapons, there's doing the different class selection, class loadout, making sure your different perks are set up appropriately, switching weapons.
All right, whoa, you're talking about multiplayer. We're talking about single player.
No. Even in single player Battlefield, yeah, you're doing all that stuff. You're switching weapons, you're scoping.
Oh, wow, really?
Downscope, yeah. I mean, you have to figure out what weapons you want to be holding. And I think the problem is that what we're talking about is basically giving everybody that sort of... I guess my point is this. We really need games that run the gamut from stuff my mom can play up through Battlefield, and maybe even more beyond Battlefield if you want some really hardcore stuff. But we have plenty of hardcore stuff. What we don't have is that connective tissue that lets people who have never played games get into games, and not with a tutorial level. Like, it's like we have nothing but 747s, and the tutorial level just serves to be like the guy down on the ground and ground control telling you roughly, like, yeah, you're going to want to make sure that you're level, and then pull on that one big red handle to make sure that you start descending for your landing. And that's what the tutorial does. But what we need is, like, crop dusters and small planes so people learn.
Yeah, that's true. Like, everybody's like, oh, well, we have casual games where you can learn how to code, where you can learn how to play. And it's always like, there's nothing between Bejeweled and dual analog shooting. There is stuff between there, but there's no connective thing. It's not like you can slowly, oh, once I play enough Bejeweled, now I'll know how to play Battlefield. And I'll know how to mouse look and iron sights. And yeah, there needs to be something. But going back to your point, Chris, would they even be willing to make a game like that? Like, that's going to be my first shooter. Like, is the market for that going to be big enough?
I think this is actually what they were talking about. I actually have the quote here if you want me to read it.
Go for it.
Electronic Arts Chief Creative Officer Richard Hillman. Our games are actually still too hard to learn. The average player probably spends 2 hours to learn to play the most basic game. And asking for 2 hours of somebody's time, most of our customers, between their normal family lives, to find 2 contiguous hours to concentrate on learning how to play a video game is a big ask.
Oh, this is a different problem. No, he's talking about people that don't have a lot of time to put in the game. I'm thinking more of a problem with how do I get competent enough that I can enter the positive feedback loop, which I think is a bigger problem.
There's a difference between someone who doesn't have time to learn something and someone who gets frustrated right from the get-go because they don't understand all of the moving parts. You need to understand all of the, or at least the basic fucking moving parts of most FPSs these days in order to keep up. And it's not about how much fucking time you put in. It's about not learning it in a way that is enjoyable, and therefore you don't fucking want to play it anymore because it's like, I don't know what's going on. I just fucking died. What's happening? I'm done. And I think
Isn't that kind of what he's talking about, though? Like, tutorials are never fun. And if you need to take, like, 2 hours of tutorial work to actually learn how to play Battlefield, having never played Battlefield before...
No, I kind of disagree. Well, okay, like, I disagree in the sense that, like, I think Titanfall is probably the best example recently of a tutorial area that I enjoyed. Because they built it to feel like you're making progress, that you're actually shooting dudes every once in a while, you're learning the different tricks, and I think for me, it was enjoyable because then once I got into the multiplayer, I was like, I know how to throw a grenade. I know when my mech's ready. I know how to stealth. I know what the objectives are. And for me, the learning process was actually fun. I think if you, and the same goes for fucking Half-Life and System Shock. Those tutorials were fun for me in the sense that I felt like I was... Deus Ex, totally! Fucking Deus Ex! It's fun for me because I'm learning the mechanics in a safe space. If you're learning the mechanics in a dangerous space, it's not fun, and you feel threatened, and it doesn't matter how much fucking time you put into it, because you feel like there's nothing... You feel helpless. You shouldn't make a person feel helpless... with the mechanics the second they fucking get into the game. You should be like, here's how you do the basic shit. Now go.
I think a lot of it is it costs so much to make game space these days. It's like, oh, you know, Deus Ex was, what, 20 hours long? And now games are like 5 and 6 hours long, and they're like, do we really want to take one of those hours of gameplay and chop a half hour off of one of them? Like, we have to divert resources from making something for most players to making something just for the newer players that most players will, like, turn their nose up at it. Even if it's like Deus Ex, and it's filled with, like, good little bits of lore. Like, the Deus Ex... tutorial was actually kind of fun. It's not a big deal. It's a little linear, but there's bits of lore, and it sort of gives you the flavor of the world. Like, even if you know how to first-person shooter, I recommend doing it. It's good. But I don't think anybody wants to put that much of their game budget into something that most people won't play. Because, I'm not a noob. I don't need no tutorial.
Wow. It's always reassuring when we discover these massive difficulties with making and producing mainstream games that might limit their audience
right
further in the future. Yeah.
It's almost like we don't think it's feasible.
Well, good thing I'm not making a video game, because then I'd have to figure this out. Much easier to just wait for somebody else to try, and then you can criticize them. That's way easier. And I think that's the diecast. Does anybody have anything witty to say so this doesn't end on a dumb note? Nobody? Really?
Yeah. It's one of those we...
Fine.